Such an prevalent.
You said that you didn't anticipate initially that it would take over and have the be such as prevalent
yes.
as it was. When do you think that that began to happen?
I didn't even see it when my brother was killed. I don't recall seeing such a drastic contrast, shall we say, in the thing. I think maybe it was so gradual that we didn't notice it.
By the time of the Zoot Suit Riots themselves, though, do you recall a sense of changes in the community or more and more young people dressing like that?
I used to see them. I'd ride the streetcar to work. I never drove to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the idea is, this is us, this is we. We just didn't have anything to do with it. But and there must have been quite a bit around there, but not to that point.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't belligerent. They weren't that way yet.
So it's something that really didn't concern you, because you saw them as other people that were not, didn't create a situation that made you fearful, for instance.
Right.
Now, did you use the word pachuco and pachuca to refer to them?
Yeah.
Do you recall?
Yeah, I know that's what they used to say. That's what they were.
And how were the girls viewed?
Also, lower class, you know. They wore those tight skirts up to here and the socks up to, and we didn't do those things. So they were really, really different.
Mm-hmm.
They never tried to go to our dances.
Mm-hmm.
They never tried to go to our parties.
Were they referred to as whores?
No, mm-hmm. just that. No, we just figured they were that type, you
mm-hmm.
know, and that was it. No, I don't think I ever labeled them
mm-hmm.
as that.
Now, right around then, as there was an increase in the prevalence of the pachucos and the pachucas, is when your brother was killed then, right around the time of
yes.
the Zoot Suit Riots. You told me off tape a little bit about it. Can you tell me that story?
Well, the only thing that we recall as a family is that he came home and he told my mom that he was going to go to confession, and he had bought this box of candy to take to this girl, I forget her name. And he said, but I'll be home early because I have to get up early to go to Mass. He said, but I'm taking the candy because you know how I like candy, I can eat it too. So he left. And he went to her house. She lived, supposedly, Hollenbeck Police Station, you know where that is. She lived on one of those side streets there. And he was at her house. She verified the fact that he had been there, and he left. And then the police had a report that he had been at the police station asking for protection, and that they had looked out, and there was nothing for him to... you know, and they figured, oh, he's just imagining things. They told him, go on home. And that was the last we saw till they found him under the First Street Bridge.
Over at First and near...
You know where the First Street Bridge is? Going to town?
Mm-hmm.
Under the bridge there on the railroad tracks. They assumed that he was hurled from the top down. But, there was... all kinds of reports, all kinds of things, you know, people. But they never really found out what had happened, how it happened or anything.
Did they associate it with gang activity at all?
They seemed to think, they had the idea that there was jealousy about the girl, but she said no, she denied it. She denied that she had any connection. And she was... very nice kid, you know, can't say anything about that. But I had to go identify the body, and then when they had the inquest, they seemed to push it more that way. I think the police themselves didn't want to admit that this gang activity was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And they would rather say that it was more personal, this boy stepping with this girl attitude.
Mm-hmm. And how was he killed? Was he killed by the fall?
The report said that he was beaten and thrown over the fence, over the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
But like I say, we never really, really got to the bottom. Many years later, my brother-in-law tried to go. He was a policeman. He tried to investigate him. They didn't find out a thing. Mm. My brother, Eddie, was working one place, and he came home one day, and he told my mom that he had to find out more about Joe because he had heard in the lunch hour a gossip about some fellow said he knew somebody that had been involved in it. And that was just a bunch of baloney, just idle talk, people trying to talk, that's all.
So it seems like there was a lot of neighborhood talk about mm-hmm. it, though. After
oh, yes, that. Yes, it was very, very tragic, and being that we were well known there, I mean, no, we were a large family, yeah. and going to school there, and the place was just packed at the inquest and all sorts of things, friends all over, because he was also doing very well in school at the time. Mm-hmm. That it was a tragedy. It was quite one of the first tragedies there. And Mom was so religious that all she did was to go to church and cry and cry mm-hmm. and cry at church and get consolation mm-hmm. there. But I think as a result of that, she was more protective of the boys and more worried about them. That when they wanted to go into the service, as much as she worried them leaving, she gave them permission to go.
That was sort of a relief to get, mm-hmm. to get
yes, and she was a 3-star mother almost.
Did the community define it as related to the gangs, do you think? Is that how they viewed it?
Well, probably in a way. They viewed it more that than a girlfriend deal, because shall I say, we weren't mixed up with it. We were separate, and they figured it was more jealousies than anything else. And a little after that was when my mother bought this other property and moved a little further down, right across from Roosevelt High. Mm. She bought another house and moved up there. To say that he was in one gang and this was another gang, or that he was involved with activities of the school and they were just, I couldn't really mm-hmm. honestly say mm-hmm. it. Because
and you say your mother basically responded in terms of seeking solace in the church.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. you had, I mean, this was the third fairly sudden death in your
mm-hmm.
family.
Right. Yes, because when the policeman came over, I was home. And she was in church. She used to go to church at Mass every morning. So I had to go to church to tell her. And I went in the back and talked to the priest. And he said, I'll tell her. And he took her in the office and he told her about it. And that's how she found out. Mm-hmm.
And this was right at about the time of the Zoot Suit Riots.
Yes.
1943.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because if he was in school there at 43, that's it. So I would say around mm-hmm. around that time, 43, maybe 44 at the most. Mm.
Do you recall the Zoot Suit Riots themselves?
Vaguely, because I was so involved with my work. I'd get up real early in the morning, take the streetcar. We moved to Pasadena. You can imagine my taking a bus. And then the red streetcar. I was too involved in my own.
So you were out of the community by that time?
Not really, no. We were living on right across the street from Roosevelt High.
Oh.
We lived there. We had two houses there. And my mom passed on. And then my sister and I stayed in one, and Gracie moved in the back house.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we'd be better off than starting with going to work. Now, it seems from... that you've probably been working in as an operator for almost 5 or so years by the time the war broke out.
About. We were trying to figure that out also, and Rosie thinks that it was only 4 years, she says. Mm-hmm. I don't think you were working full-time as much as that, she said. But I figure about... Roughly, mm-hmm. about that, because I met my husband, I was working for Molly when I met him. She had a party for her birthday, and I met him at the party.
So he was someone she knew?
Yes. No, she didn't know him. Her girlfriend invited him and his friend to the party.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of cute. He spotted me across the room, and he told his friend, "You see that girl over there? I'm going to marry her." And he came across the room, asked me to dance, and introduced himself. And he says, "Oh, you were so snotty." He said, "Well, I have the next two. You want to wait for the third one?" But from there on, he tried. He wanted to get married right away, but I wasn't ready for it.
So you started seeing each other then after that point?
Mm-hmm.
And did he then become, because up until then you said that you had not really had a steady boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
You
he wasn't my steady boyfriend mm-hmm. either.
So you were still seeing other boys?
Yes. We would see each other, and he would pressure me to get married, and I wouldn't see him. And I'd see other fellows. He'd see other girls, and he'd go his merry way until I didn't actually promise to marry him till he went in the service.
And when did he go in the service?
He went to Germany. He was a prisoner mm-hmm. of war in Germany. Mm-hmm. And I told him that when he'd come back, he wanted to get married by proxy. He wanted everything under the sun. And he says, "No, because when I come back, I know you're going to be married." I said, "Nope. Even if I want to, I'll wait till you come back."
Now, were you already working at Lockheed then by the time he went into the service?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
Now,
yes,
how did you decide to leave Molly's shop and start work at Lockheed?
The money. To be perfectly honest with you, there wasn't that much money working as an operator, and I could see that I wasn't going to make it, and the money was in defense. You made more hours. The more hours you made, the more money you made, and it was exciting, and being involved in that era, you figured you were doing something for your country and at the same time making money.
Mm-hmm. How did you find out about the defense jobs?
Oh, they had ads all over. There was ads all over on it. And I thought I'd try it, give it a try and see if I could do it. I knew I could always come back to what I was doing as long as I kept my operator's license. There was no question about it. I could always come back. So I tried it, and I enjoyed it.
So your notion was that this would be something that you would try out. Stay in, mm-hmm. or maybe go back to being
yes, because there was so much talk about it being such hard work, and I had never done hard work, that they used to tell me, you know, my girlfriends would tell me, "Why are you going to try that when you have this nice, clean job here, you know?" And well, I wanted to try it.
Well, where did the idea of it being hard work come from? Was this from other women who were already working in defense?
And the ads, they talk about the riveting and the, what was the other thing, running some sort of a machine, I forget the name, dimpling I think they called it. And they claimed that the legs of the women was hard on the legs, and there was few men working there, so it wasn't for the glamour, that you weren't going to meet all this guy. You were be working primarily with women.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd knock it. A lot of people would knock it because I had this clean job. Why go into that?
Hmm.
You don't even know where you're going to be put, because they'd put you give you an examination dexterity, I guess, and everything, and see where you were better qualified, and they would teach you that.
Was there any special thing about the ads that appealed to you in terms of deciding to take a defense job for yourself?
No. No, I think the main thing I wanted to do was see if I could make more money.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little disappointed that I didn't get the following or make the money I thought I was going to make. Like Molly would tell me, give it a chance. You're just starting. Give it a chance. Try hard. But I guess I was a little impatient.
Mm. Now, when you say ads, where were these exactly? Were these
in the papers?
In the newspapers?
In the newspapers, uh-huh. Yes. You'd see them periodically in the newspapers, in the employment section, in different sections.
Did you know anybody who was already working in defense before you?
No, I didn't until I went in there. But See, our Molly's shop was on Brooklyn. So it was hard to say that anybody from there was working over there. I wasn't that close to any of the mm-hmm. customers. The few that we were close to happened not to be working there. So I didn't know anybody till I actually went mm-hmm. to work there.
Well, and how about the other women in the clubs? Was there talk about getting defense jobs among them?
No, I don't think so. I think the main reason we discussed it is because we were so close over here, me working for Molly. Look at Rose, she didn't go to work, and mm-hmm. she kept on her. I was the only one that did it.
So you were really kind of the first in your social circle
mm-hmm.
to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it that you expected, do you think, before you went and applied for the job or anything? What did you have in mind of what it would be like?
A whole new experience. Find out really and see if it was as lucrative as it panned out, because they did make it seem very good, and they did tell you that you could do this and do that. And then being that my brothers were talk about going in the Navy, I guess I felt, you know, this is something new, why not try it?
Mm-hmm. What was your expectation about what the pay was going to be when you first went to apply?
Well, they were, at the time, I know that it was union wages, and it was minimum union wage. So I knew that I would be making that for sure, and plus time and a half, and double time, and even triple time.
And this was all basically from the newspapers that you got that mm-hmm, rather
mm-hmm.
than a direct
mm-hmm,
contact.
Mm-hmm.
How did you happen to pick Waukeet?
Because it was local.
Mm-hmm.
The others were far away.
Mm-hmm.
And this, they had their building, big building there on 7th and right below the bridge.
Okay.
See, it's right around there.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this huge building. It was easy for me to get to it. A lot of the people worked for Lockheed that was, oh, I don't know where, way out in God's country, yeah.
So you were aware that there was a Lockheed plant over
mm-hmm.
downtown?
Yeah.
Not
yes,
far from
yes, that I could communicate to take the Soda Street bus and the other bus over.
And at that point you were still living on 4th Street?
4th Street, yes.
Now, do you remember where you went to be interviewed or what that interview and testing process was like?
No. No, I really don't remember. I know they gave you a regular interview and regular. But I don't remember really where it was.
Was it, do you recall if it was at Lockheed itself or was it a central employment office?
I think it was there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was there. I'm not positive, but I think it was right there because I don't recall going to an employment office or going far away
mm-hmm.
for it. I think it was all handled right there.
And what, how long after you went for the interview did you start working, do you remember?
I think once they checked your, they were quite specific of your about your American citizenship and stuff like that. They made that very
mm-hmm.
clear. I think once they checked you out there, if you were hired, you came to work. I don't think I stayed long to go to work.
Mm. Do you recall what you were told about how to prepare for work in terms of dress?
Pants
mm-hmm.
and net, hair net always. Protect your hair. Wear sensible shoes. And makeup, they didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
That, as long as you wore your pants and wore sensible shoes and kept your hair out of the way.
And how about things like tools?
Well, they gave you everything, I guess, there.
Okay, so you weren't told to bring...
No.
Did you have the clothing, or did you have to go out and get things?
I probably had some pants that I started out with, and then afterward I probably bought some more as I went along.
Mm-hmm. You said that there was some testing for mechanical aptitude. Do you recall that at all?
No. I don't think it was that impressive, no. I know that I was put as a drilling holes. What the heck they called it? I don't remember what
mm-hmm.
they called it right now. But that's what I was put to do in the first place. you worked in a certain, like we worked in a wing section.
Mm-hmm.
And you went to that department, and that's all you worked on, that particular design there. You know,
drilling what? And also riveting, or just the, or
no,
drilling?
No, just drilling.
Just
no,
drilling.
Riveting was another. I think riveting, they picked the more stronger girls,
mm-hmm.
bigger girls. I wasn't considered that big at the time. I'm much heavier now, but at the time I was much thinner. And I think they used to pick for those jobs. They really picked the stronger girls,
mm-hmm.
because that you could hear them, and I think, you know, and it was quite nerve-wracking.
Were you told during your interview, before you actually came to work, what your job would be? Did you know that
no.
first day what you would be doing?
No, no. Until you went to report for work, then they would send you to that section, and the supervisor would tell you, describe the job,
mm-hmm.
give you somebody to tell you how to do.
Did you recall that first day reporting, what that was like, how you proceeded?
I don't think it was hard, because the job I did wasn't hard, just drilling holes in certain little dots that were in this wing section.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing I had to learn was to hold the drill, and that's not hard. Until I started complaining that my legs used to tire on me. Then they put me to work help in the toolbox.
Now, you say you were complaining about your legs.
Mm-hmm.
Were there mats or anything that you had to stand on? Was there anything that would...
No, because you stood on like little ladders.
Mm-hmm.
See, the things were so huge. You climbed up on those little ladders and stood up there.
How large, can you describe the first crew that you worked with and your lead man when you first
I became started? Friendly with one girl, Jeanette, an Italian girl. We were very close work. But I think there was about maybe 20, 30 in the crew that would work in this particular section. And you had one person that would supervise you, and then the regular supervisor would come around and check. Then the, what did they call them that would come and check the work? See that the inspectors,
mm-hmm.
see that the holes were drilled straight in, not in an angle, because the metal, not in
mm-hmm.
an angle, it had to be straight in, and would either... you know, accept your work or disqualify or something. So
now, was the whole crew drilling, and they were drilling on different parts of the wing section?
Right, right.
How large a section of the wing was it?
God.
Maybe 20 or 30 feet?
Easily the size of this place here.
Uh-huh. So maybe about 25 feet.
Mm, you couldn't be carrying a conversation, far from it.
Mm.
It was big.
And there'd be about 20 or so working on this...
Mm-hmm.
this section,
mm-hmm.
and everyone would be...
Then they would tow that wing away, and we'd start on another.